En mörk oändlig Ingmar.
Welcome to Views from the World Tree. On this week's show, we wade out into the waters, put a line in, and share our best fish stories. We're going to talk about fishing. And now, on with the show.
Under en himmel.
Yes, I see. Good news, everyone.
For news for this week, for me, I am not currently reading anything other than listening to Ready Player One while I fall asleep to the dulcet tones of Mr. Wheaton.
That's actually funny because I had a case of insomnia earlier this week and actually put on Ready Player One.
Nice. So. Yeah, so good book. And then as far as what I've been watching, we're actually recording this on Saturday this week, which happens to be November the 5th. So I am watching V for Vendetta in honor of Guy Fawkes Day, which I watch every November 5th, or try to anyway.
That is one of my all-time favorites. Movie is okay. Story is okay, but I just love good films about bucking the system. That maybe I'm a revolutionary at heart, but I do love that film.
Yeah, me too. And then as far as actual news, I saw this headline and I just had to share it. So the actual headline from military.com: U.S. Air Force says penis-shaped flight path pointed at Russian base is a coincidence. So there's this website, Flight Radar 24, that tracks planes. And some Twitter accounts were watching and pointed out that a U.S. Air Force, I think it was a KC-135 tanker, that was doing some refueling off the coast of Cyprus. Their flight path looked suspiciously phallic in nature. So, and it happened to be pointed directly at the Russian forces that are currently engaged in the region. And there was an Italian newspaper that reported on it. They wrote an article about it and they stated, and I quote, "The shape is, in fact, unequivocally that of a penis." So, this one made me laugh.
Oh my gosh.
It was a good one. Anybody listening, if you haven't seen it, just Google it. It's pretty undeniable.
It is. That popped up on, so before I go to bed, I always open up my Apple News app on my phone, and that was on the front page of my Apple News was this picture of a penis. Language warning, too late. Anyway, it was a picture of this penis drawn just southeast of Cyprus in the Gulf. In the Mediterranean Sea, I should say. And I just, yes, funny, well done. And I love that the U.S. Air Force is saying, yeah, it's just a coincidence. And I know that every single pilot in the U.S. Air Force is probably going, man, those guys are legend. So,
yeah, it was a good one. Anyway, that's it for me. Pretty light this week.
Well, that's all right. So as far as me reading, like my co-host here, I am reading absolutely nothing. I've been kind of categorizing some books and getting ready to sell a bunch of stuff on eBay. And so I've been thumbing through books, but I have actually not been reading anything, which is weird for me because I always have 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 books that I'm reading at a time.
Yeah, it happens.
And then watching slash playing. So Victoria 3 came out recently, and I postponed buying it. If you don't know, Paradox is a Swedish company, and they do a lot of grand strategy games. And Victoria 3 is one that takes place during the Industrial Revolution, where you basically take control of a country and try to either preserve the monarchy or force revolution and create democracy or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been holding off on actually buying it. I didn't want to. And then I got sucked into watching some YouTubers talk about the depth of the game and how it's played and some of the mods that people are developing for it. And I bit the bullet and bought it. So I haven't played it yet, but it's on my list of things to do once I finally have time.
Nice. I actually have not heard of this one. I have played some of their other games. I've played Prison Architect, Cities Skylines. Those are the ones that I can remember off the top of my head. I know they have a bunch of them, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Fun games. This one is more aligned with Crusader Kings. It's kind of a take a nation and you can use diplomacy, espionage, assassins, anything to gain power and hold power and hopefully gain more power. Except this one takes place during the reign of Queen Victoria. So
gotcha.
It's turn of the century. I think it starts in 1830s or so. And then the official end date is, I think, 1920. It goes through the First World War.
Okay.
So
cool. Well, sounds like it's right up your alley.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about those games. I love them. Gives me power, I guess. I can be a jerk to my citizens, and they can't say anything about it. Except in this game, they can. They'll kick me out and establish their own government if I'm too mean.
Nice.
But then you could just call me Tsar Nicholas. And as far as news, I actually don't have much, except the reason why we are recording this on Saturday is I am working the equivalent of three jobs while also doing this this podcast hosting and trying to create content and sell stuff on eBay and trying to just hustle my way into not having to work so hard. Unfortunately, hustling my way into not working so hard has actually made me work a lot harder. It kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's annoying how that is. If you want to put in less effort, you have to put in more effort first.
Yeah, that's what they say. But oh well, one of these days, I'll look back on this time of my life and go, "All right, it was worth it." Or I'll look back and go, "Yeah, that was a wasted year and a half. Screw that."
It'll probably be some of both.
Probably. But that's my news.
Cool. Well, should we go fishing?
Let's do it.
So what then is fishing? Fishing is basically the activity of trying to catch fish. Fish are caught as wildlife from like natural lakes and streams. Also, sometimes they are caught from stocked bodies of water. It's like community ponds and canals and things like that. I know in my neck of the woods, there's a lot of fish stocking that goes on, even in natural bodies of water, just because fishing is really popular. And so the various wildlife agencies will, you know, stock feeder fish into these natural lakes and streams to try and bolster the natural populations. But anyway.
Before we move on, similar here. I live in a little bit more of an urban environment, and you can actually find fishing spots in cities as well. A lot of city ponds, city lakes are stocked. In fact, in the heart of Denver, in the middle of their city park, they have some of the best bass fishing that you can get shoreline, because it's stocked with these warm water fish that are just great fighters. They're caught a lot, so you actually have to outsmart them, because city ponds are catch and release only. There's no taking out in those.
Gotcha. Well, that's kind of a good segue then into like why do people go fishing? Like what's the point, right? When you can go and buy fish from the supermarket, why would somebody choose to go fishing? Because fishing obviously has been an important part of human culture since like way, way back. And it's one of the few types of food production that has persisted like all the way through to the modern age. It survived like the Industrial Revolution and everything. So what's a reason that you go fishing?
So me personally, we've touched this before when we talked a little bit about gun safety and whatnot. I don't like taking the lives of things. I have no problem eating them. I just don't like getting blood on my hands type of thing. So I always do it for the sport. And I know sport, anything when it comes to outdoors, gets a bad rep. But fishing is a little bit different, because you can take something out of the water and put it back, and actually it will survive. But the type of fishing that I like to do is very sport-based, very much. Can I make a fish believe that this piece of thread and feather is actually a fly? And can I get it to bite it? And take it out. Like it's man versus beast. It's primal in a way, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So you had alluded to like fly fishing there. So there's different types of fishing, obviously. There's different types of gathering. You can gather them by hand. This is really popular, like in Texas, where you'll reach down into a hole and try and get a catfish to latch onto your arm.
Call it noodling. It's actually, I have done that once. It is kind of scary and really kind of cool when you pull out like a 10-pound catfish that has just tried to swallow your arm.
It's a lot of fun. I've seen it done. I've never had a chance to do it myself, but yeah. So
I guess since we're into the discussion, the basic technique of that is you put your hand down into some murky water and you move your finger, so a fish will think that your finger is a worm, and they will come, and because catfish swallow their prey whole, they don't nibble at it. They will open as big as they think that worm is, and they will take you up to your wrist sometimes trying to get that worm.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. So besides like hand gathering, there's also like spear fishing. You can catch fish with net, all types of like fish traps. But for what I figured we would talk about today, which is catching fish with a rod and reel, it's called angling. So that's what I figured we would focus on. It's the popular type of fishing. It's what everybody knows. So
yeah, it's also one that requires one of the cheapest licenses. Spear fishing, net fishing usually require a little bit more licensure. Fishing pole, you can usually get your either your local, state, or country government to issued a fishing license pretty easy, pretty cheaply.
Yeah.
So anyway, angling. So in Old English, the fish hook was actually called an angle. And that's where we get our name angling. So angling is the fishing technique that uses a fish hook attached to a line. And the goal is to get the fish to bite the hook. And then you set the angle to bring the fish in. Kind of like you had said, it's one of the oldest techniques out there. The hook itself can also be weighted down to help you cast it further. If you're in fly fishing, you actually use a different technique to get the fish hook out there, but they all deal around with getting a hook out into a body of water to try to get the fish to take it. And then depending on what type of fishing you are doing, you will tend to have an indicator. Fly fishing, if you've ever seen the movie A River Runs Through It, use a float line, which once the fish takes the hook, the line will sink and you can kind of see that. Or if you're using a different type of line, which is a sink line, you'll use almost like a little bobber that goes up there so that you can see when the fish strikes the line. As far as bait fishing, just casting and waiting, it tends to be a bobber or a bubble, or lure fishing, which we'll talk about a little bit later. You tend not to have an indicator because you're actively fishing the entire time. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
So then when you're fishing, we talked about the whole process is you throw this hook out there and you try and get the fish to take the hook. And the way that you do that is you make the hook look attractive to the fish. You want to bait the hook. And there's a couple different types of baiting that you can do. There's edible baits, which is divided into natural and artificial. And then there's a lure bait, which is not edible. So for natural baits, a natural bait is basically anything that is present within the fish's natural diet. So it can be alive or it can be dead. And if it's like a bait that's made of like chopped up dead insects or other fish is known as cut bait. So common natural baits are worms, leeches, minnows, frogs, basically anything that lives in the water. And then also insects, crayfish, crabs sometimes. And natural baits are pretty effective because they have the actual real texture, the real scent, the real color that the fish is used to. Earthworms, so night crawlers, worms, are kind of the universal live bait for freshwater angling. Grubs and maggots are also sometimes used. Some people also use like grasshoppers and crickets. And then a lot of anglers swear by trout or salmon eggs. They'll actually spear the egg onto a hook, and they say that that's, you know, the superior type of bait. There is a caveat to using live bait, and I'll let Steve weigh in on this more from like the ecology standpoint, but live bait is actually illegal in a lot of bodies of water because the transportation of bait fish can spread all types of like diseases and stuff. So if you plan to use live bait, just check the regulations before you do, because it's in the cases where it is legal, there's definitely like stipulations that you have to follow. So what is it specifically about live bait that can spread disease, or why is spreading disease bad, I guess?
Well, anytime you anytime you introduce something that isn't natural to these to the waters that you're at, you have the potential for something bad to happen, right? Kind of like the movie Outbreak, or the book Prey, or heck, we just had a pandemic not too long ago, and it looks like we might be gearing up for another one. Anytime that something's introduced into a system that doesn't know how to fight it or how to balance it, things can get bad. And so it's more just in case. If you use a minnow from a certain body of water where there's a certain virus present, and then the minnow spreads that virus to another fish, it could wipe out an entire population. It's just dangerous and not very good. Etiquette. As far as live bait goes, you're almost always safe with night crawlers. Those are everywhere. They're found in every type of water. Ecologically speaking, if a body of water has worms in it, let me roll that back. Every body of water should have worms in it, because worms are one of the few ecological indicators of water, basically. Pollution to clean water will have worms in it. If you don't have worms in it, there's no fish in it, so there's no worries.
Gotcha.
So it's more just to make sure that you're safe. Also, certain live baits have been known to escape and cause issues. Slugs have taken over certain waterways that shouldn't have them, because they have no natural predators. So it's just a way to do that. Another thing when you're using fake ones, and we'll get into it, often scenting, using artificial scents on your baits is highly illegal in a lot of places. For similar reasons, they don't want the fish to get used to the scents and stop feeding themselves.
Makes sense.
So, sorry. Hopefully that shines a little bit of light on it.
Yeah, exactly. And the only other thing I would add is there's a disease that's common among trout species called whirling disease. It's what it sounds like. It causes the fish just to swim in circles until they die. So even in places where using bait fish is legal, you should never use trout or salmon as your bait, because you can spread whirling disease to the population of the fish that are there.
And by the way, we are talking freshwater. You can use as much live bait as you want in the oceans. In fact, that's usually the best place to live bait your lines.
Yeah, we're both landlocked here, so.
Yep. We talked a little bit about natural baits, artificial baits. So these are baits that are meant to mimic things that are natural. As far as flies, you'll see any mountain town in the western United States, up in Scotland, there's a lot of fly fishing in Scotland. Places where there are rivers that hold fish, you will see fly fishing shops. And if you ever walk into them, you will notice that there's little hooks that are wrapped in thread, feathers, furs, things like that. And that is one way to artificially mimic something in the wild. If you talk to an avid fisherman, they will have I used to call it my little black book, and everybody's gave me crap because that has like dating connotation. But my little black book had the dates of all the major hatches in the rivers that I like to go through, the size of hook that I should use, what fur I should use on the hook, and all of that. And it was a book that gave me an advantage based on the hatching patterns of the insects, because fly fishing is all about looking at insects. There's other types of artificial lures, as simple as something called a spoon, which is basically a piece of metal shaped like a spoon with a hook on it. As you reel it in, it'll look like a fish that's swimming. There's spin baits that will create kind of an underwater sound as it moves through the water to alert the fish that something's there, and then they see a flash of metal, and they'll go after it. And I'm trying to think. I mean, they have artificial worms, artificial eggs, artificial everything, as far as that goes.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are made of silicone that are made to mimic like little fish or other creatures. So you can use jigs, is what those are called usually. Spin baits, crank baits. It's all about, and it depends on the fish species as well, because some fish won't go after artificial lures unless they look like food. Other species of fish, especially sport fish, are very territorial, and so they'll try and strike anything that gets in their territory. So some of the artificial lures play on that predator instinct that some fish have. So
if you ever watch YouTube or TV, like sport fishing, some of the most predatorial fish are bass. And when you get a big bass that hits a lure, it will almost throw itself out of the water to strike those things. And it's really something else to see.
Yeah, it's also why fishing with artificial lures typically doesn't use an indicator like a bobber or a float. Because you throw the lure out, and as you're reeling it in, you are like popping the pole and stuff, trying to make it look realistic or enticing. And then when the fish hits it, you definitely feel it, like at the instant that fish tries to bite at the lure. And so that's why it's a much more dynamic, fast paced type of fishing. So definitely more of that sport fishing.
Looking over the notes, I realized that we forgot to talk about the artificial edibles.
Yeah, so we'll talk about those.
We'll reverse track a little bit and go back to the edible baits. So what are your go-tos as far as edible baits?
So my go-to is either garlic scented power bait, or there's a purple nymph power bait that has like little bits of ground up insect in it. And I should clarify that power bait is a brand name, but it's kind of like Kleenex or one of those other brand names that comes to mean the actual item. It's basically like a dough, material that you, or like a clay that you get a little bit on your finger and you form it around the hook, and it has scent, it has taste, it also disguises the hook, and then the fish will come up and try and eat it. So that's my go-to artificial edible bait. I don't do a lot of bait fishing just because the fish tends to swallow it and then it becomes impossible to release the fish because they typically injure themselves while you're pulling them in. But if I am fishing for food, if I'm out camping or something, then power bait's a good go-to, and the garlic scented stuff seems to work really well for the trout here in my area.
That's usually the only time I use power bait, is when I'm fishing for food, just because, like you said, they tend to swallow whole.
Yeah,
they don't really nibble. You'll notice if you go out fishing that fish don't like to nibble on things. If they're nibbling, they don't believe that what you have is actually edible, and so they might take a little bit of a taste.
Yeah.
But yeah,
No other people. Sorry. So just to continue on the artificial edible baits, corn was really popular, kind of like in when my dad was growing up, that they would use that a lot. And Velveeta cheese was also really popular. So those are the ones that I've used, but I mean, people use all kinds of things. Some people will make their own with like rice paste. And then I guess for catfish, like channel catfish, I've used hot dogs. Just a piece of hot dog on a circle hook seems to do really well for that. So I don't know if that counts as artificial or not. It's artificial to the catfish's natural diet, I guess.
Artificial to the environment, because I would put Velveeta under that, and I love using Velveeta mostly because if I can't catch a fish, I can still snack. Eat.
Yeah. Yeah, you just get like the 5-pound block and you're set.
Yep.
And then you don't poop for like 2 weeks.
That's very true.
Excuse me, sorry. Yeah, so I think that covers my knowledge of the artificial edible bait, unless I missed something.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that I would add when you're using anything that's not natural to the environment is you have to kind of know what you're going for. If you're going for catfish, which are bottom feeders, they will eat anything. Almost anything you put out there, they will eat. I've always had really good luck with catfish with white bread and just rolling the white bread around a hook and throwing that out there with a couple weights.
Yeah.
If you're looking for something that's a little bit more, a little higher on the food chain, like a trout or something, I'd stick with the power baits and the things that are actually geared towards the fish itself. And so do a little bit of research before you go out to figure out what type of artificial baits your fish does like. Just because it does vary from species to species. And if you are going for sport fish, bass, walleye, pike, artificial food is not going to do it. They're not going to eat it. They're not going to be fooled by it. And if they do take it, it's probably going to be a snagged fish and not an actual caught fish, which can actually land you in jail in most places.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, I think we've covered different types of bait. So let's move on to fishing techniques. There are four basic techniques for fishing. The first two are both considered types of bait fishing. So we can just go through these and just alternate. So most recreational angling, like we said, you do with a fishing rod. It's what it sounds like. It's a big rod that holds the line, and that's used to manipulate the movement of the line. It also allows you to cast your bait out further, and then it has a reel attached to it so you can wind the line back in. Float fishing is probably the most common method, at least according to the articles that I was reading. And this is where you have a compact light float attached to the fishing line, like a bobber of some type, to indicate when the fish has taken the bait. And the bobber is buoyant, usually made out of foam or filled with air, so it floats on top of the water. And then the baited hook kind of dangles below it at whatever depth you want to set it to. And then it can also like drift in the current and carry the hook to areas that you can't cast to. So sometimes a technique would be to cast it out by a log or something and then let the current carry it down past the log. So you avoid like snagging your line. But in any case, it's just a method of getting the bait out there. It's suspended in the water. And then when the fish bites, the float will dip below the surface for a visual indicator. And then the fisherman tries to reel the fish in.
Perfect. The next one is a sink line. This is similar, except instead of having a bobber indicator, you're going to use most normally you use little pieces of lead to weigh down your line to get it out there. And basically you attach your food, your lure, whatever you want, whatever you're getting, to sink to the bottom and stay down there. So fish, we'll talk about it a little bit later when we talk about where to find fish, but water, thermodynamics of water works in the column, basically. And so the idea behind this is to put the food down below the hot water column. So you're going to get more of the bottom feeders, more of the catfish, or if the weather is super cold, it actually brings the fish down to, or the bait down to where the fish are, because fish aren't up on the surface during cold weather.
Cool.
Yep. I usually use this with worms, leeches, things that are found in the sediment anyway, because worms you're not going to find on top of a lake.
Yeah. All right. So the third fishing technique, then, we talked about a little bit earlier. This is lure fishing. This is my preferred method. And lure fishing uses an artificial inedible bait, usually made from wood, metal, plastic. And unlike conventional fishing baits, lures don't have any scent, so they can't attract the fish that way. But they mimic prey appearances, movements. They give off vibrations. They have bright reflections, flashy colors to entice those predatory fish into a defensive strike response. Also, most lures have more than one hook just to increase the chance that they'll anchor into the fish's mouth. And lure fishing is more popular in recreational fishing than trying to actually catch fish to eat, because it's more fun, but also because it does lend itself to that catch and release fishing practice. So the process there, you just repeatedly cast the lure out as far as you can, or you try and target areas where fish might be hiding. And then you are just very methodically in the way that you retrieve the line. So you pull it through the water, trying to create vibrations, splashes, or popping action to imitate aquatic prey, or like a drowning insect in the case of fly fishing. And then, like we mentioned, in contrast to bait fishing, there's no bobber or anything. It's just when the lure catches the attention of a fish and the fish strikes it, you can 100% feel it. And you just jerk on the rod to try and set the hook in the fish's mouth and then reel it in.
Perfect. Our next one is trawling. In the United States, it's spelled like trolling. In the UK, it's spelled T-R-A-W, trawl. Basically, this is a technique that commercial fishermen have done, where you set a lure or some sort of bait, you run it behind a boat moving at a slow speed. That way, you're not reeling it in, and the boat is actually mimicking the direction of the bait so that the fish will just grab onto it. Let's see. A variation of this is also called drift fishing, which is usually done from an unpowered boat in faster flowing waters. You can also cast out a lure and just let it run behind from a canoe or a rowboat or something like that, that's in a little bit of a current. But this is something that our uncle actually does quite often. He'll go up and he's got a trawling motor, and he'll cast 3, 4, 5 fishing lines out and just let the boat do the work.
I haven't done it very much because I don't have a boat, but it's a lot of fun.
Yep. I'm going to add a little bit to our casting methods or our fishing methods with fly fishing. So this actually kind of encompasses all four versions that we talked about. It's a very interesting technique. You're going to use a very light line, and through a series of movements, you're going to cast the line out. Instead of waiting the line, you're going to basically use momentum to get the line out there. There's two different types of lines. One's a float line, one's a sink line. Hence, depending on where you want the bait to go, that's the line that you're going to use. If you're on a river, you'll cast your lure upstream and just let the current take it downstream, almost like a trawling. Or you can actively pull, push, do any of that with your fly line to mimic lure fishing. So it is a technique that encompasses every major angling technique, which is why usually when people start fly fishing, they don't go back.
Yeah, fly fishing is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the last thing that we wanted to talk about today was, where do we find fish? How do you catch them? Where do you look for them? How do you know what kind of fish is in what kind of environment? So the first thing that I wanted to say, and this is off the notes, so Adam, you can jump in if you can if you think of anything or whatnot.
Okay, but sounds good.
There's two basic types of fish fishing. There's warm water fishing and cold water fishing. Here in America and Canada, cold water fishing is where you're going to find your salmon and your trout. Warm water is where you're going to find your carp and your bass. So depending on the type of fishing you're looking for, look for the type of water to go to. And so basically you can go into any fish store and say, hey, I'm looking at where I can catch some trout. And they will give you a map of rivers, lakes, things that, places where you can find them. Also, a lot of really good outfitters will have stocking maps, and they'll tell you which way to go. So know what you're going for, know what type of water you're looking for, and then ask for advice as far as that. As far as once you know what you're, where you're going, how do you find where the fish are? Fish do not swim around in the ocean or in the open all day. They tend to hide. They hide under bits of debris. They hide under sunken structures. They like to hide under bridges. If you're at a reservoir, they love to hide on dams, which is probably why most reservoirs have no fishing from the dam signs everywhere you go. So they will look for anything that will provide some cover, because even though you get some really big fish, like you could get a northern pike that's almost 2 feet long, there's always something that is hunting them, and it's usually from the sky. Eagles, osprey, any of those birds of prey. Fish is one of their number one preys. And so if you're looking for fish, look for them in places where they get some cover. In the summer, when the heat of the water is well mixed, oxygenated water is going to be on the top and the bottom. You can find them anywhere. During the winter, you're actually going to find them a little bit deeper, because the warmer water is actually going to be below the colder water, which is very weird, because when you're us beings that live in the air, cold water falls, hot air, or cold air falls, hot air rises. It's actually kind of opposite in the winter. So if you're going fishing on a cold day, or when you're going fishing. In the winter, you need to make sure that you've got enough enough line to get down to where the fish are. If you're fishing in a river, fish will always face upstream. They never face downstream. This actually makes it so that they can sit still and let the river push water through their gills so that they can get oxygen without having to actively swim to get oxygen. So if you're trying to catch a fish from a river, put your bait upstream and let it go downstream so that the fish can see it. I think that's about it. Is there anything else that I may have missed on how to find, where to find, who to find?
I don't think so, other than, I mean, I would say it's one of those things that you just have to get out and try and catch the fish. Like, it's kind of hard to explain, and like you could read about where to find fish. You could be at the right lake. You could find something that in theory should be like the perfect fish habitat, but there might not be any fish there. And so after, like, the more that you go, the more that you fish, the more these spots that you try, you kind of develop a feel for it. And it's, I'm not trying to make it sound mystical, but it's almost an art form in a way, being able to like look at a river and kind of read the river and look for like your eddy pools and, you know, under overhangs of banks and stuff like that. And you're like, I'll bet there's a fish over there. And so, and then the other thing I would say is if you're not catching anything, like change it up, try a different bait, move to a different spot. There's no need to keep beating your head against it if you're not making progress. If you're not getting any bites, then move on. Also, take into account the time of day. If you go fishing in the middle of the day, you're probably not going to catch very much unless you're trolling and fishing super deep, like with downriggers and stuff. Fish are very active in the early morning and in the evening. So those are probably the best times to go. So there's like all these different things that kind of factor into it. And if you go and you don't get anything, like, don't let that get you down. Fishing is all about just getting out and enjoying nature. So I don't always catch fish every time that I go. But recently, I haven't really had the time to go fishing on my own. The only times I've had a chance to go has been with like family or friends or whatever. And so I try and focus more on like helping the other people catch fish. Like, my wife recently got into fishing. She was never really interested. So when we go, I try and focus on making sure that she finds the good fishing holes and that she's able to at least pull in a couple of fish. Or if we go with like our friends that we go camping with up here in Idaho, have quite a few kids. And so I'll, you know, take one or two of them and go find a nice little spot and try and make sure that they have a good experience with it.
There you go. That kind of reminds me of a quote, and it's one that you hear a lot of old timers say, which is, a bad day fishing beats a good day at work.
Yep.
And the whole idea behind this quote is, even if you return with nothing, the memories that you have, like going up with your friends and sharing nature, going up with family and just bonding, talking, in the Wonder Years, reboot, there's an episode where, this young boy is really struggling, and his dad just takes him fishing. They didn't catch anything, but they just shared a moment, pole in hand, at a lake. And it's an amazing thing to get into. Even if you suck at it, there's nothing better than sitting next to a body of water, in just being there and just turning your mind off or having deep conversations or even light conversations. Or if you live in the deep south, drinking more beer than you do putting a line in the water. There's just something therapeutic about going out and fishing.
Yeah, agreed.
So I think that's our show.
Okay. What do we have for mindfulness this week?
There is a famous, I guess it's a famous movie that was brought about by a quasi-famous book called A River Runs Through It by Norman MacLean. And so I chose a quote from that since our episode's all about fishing. And the quote is, "Many of us would probably be better fishermen if we did not spend so much time watching and waiting for the world to become perfect." And I kind of like this. As you could tell throughout this, there's really no perfect technique to catch a fish. There's no perfect fishing spot. There's no perfect weather. There's no, nothing is for certain when you're a fisherman. You have to adapt to the environment. You have to adapt to the weather. You have to adapt to what the fish is looking for that day in order to catch it. And I feel like this quote is all about being adaptable, being able to change direction, to change your thought, to change your focus, in order to be successful. And I feel like this does apply to life. When we're really in it, we tend to bang our head in the same spot and expect a hole to appear, which sometimes it does, but you're at risk for brain damage when you're doing that. Like, you've got to be adaptable and find another way to solve your problems, another way around things. And I just feel like this quote kind of fits not only fishing, but also life, just being adaptable and willing to look outside the box.
Yeah, having those qualities is definitely something that applies in many, many different situations and can definitely increase your quality of life. So it's a good one. I like it.
It's hard. That book is full of so many philosophical sayings. It's almost like the guy that wrote it just loved his time on the river more than anything else.
Yeah, it's hard not to be contemplative and philosophical when you're out fishing by yourself, which mm-hmm. is one of the reasons I like it.
Well, what's our next episode bringing us?
So our next episode, we are trying to look at the calendar and see what's coming up. And, there's a holiday called St. Andrew's Day. It's a Scottish holiday, Scottish festival. And so that's what we're going to take a look at. We'll be taking a look at St. Andrew's Day. What is it? Why is it? And how should we celebrate it?
Cool. I'm looking forward to this one. I have no idea what St. Andrew's Day is. So it's time to research.
Okay. Well, we'll see you guys then.
Bye.